Hi friends, Ron here. In a moment, I'm going to join Donna and our wonderful guests for this month's episode of Practical Significance. But first, I bring you a word from our sponsor, Statistical Bias. I'm back for another private chat with you because, well, the subject of bias can be awkward and inflammatory. No one wants to be accused of being biased. No one wants their statistics to be biased either. But when it comes to statistical bias, in the words of Inigo Montoya, I don't think it means what you think it means. For example, the parents of both teams at my kids' soccer games often accuse the referees of being biased. How they can get anyone to referee kids' sports is beyond me, but I digress. When we say a person is biased, that typically means they have preconceived, unfair notions in favor or against someone or something. And the perception of bias is troubling, though that doesn't excuse parental behavior during sports contests. But statistical bias is more technical, yet more tangible, and can take many forms. For example, a biased estimator consistently overestimates or consistently underestimates. Selection bias can occur if we don't conduct sampling properly. Response bias leads to misleading survey results. It's often difficult to recognize and acknowledge personal bias, much less address it. But statistical bias is not like that. Statistical bias can be recognized and managed, but just like personal bias, when we don't recognize statistical bias, misinformation and bad choices can result. So, I want to share with you privately an oh-so-easy step that can spare you the wasted time and potential embarrassment of biased statistics. Consult a professional statistician. Don't wait until it's too late. Make that call today. And now, let's join the podcast.
Hello, and welcome to Practical Significance, a podcast to inspire listeners with compelling stories from statistics and data science and to propel data-driven careers forward. Here are your hosts, the ASA's Director of Strategic Initiatives, Donna Lalonde, and Executive Director, Ron Wasserstein.
Welcome, everyone, to this episode of Practical Significance. Ron and I are very grateful to our colleagues, Adrian Coles and David Marker, for joining us again. They joined us last year to talk about this year, the final report and recommendations from the Anti-Racism Task Force. And we'll start by just asking Adrian and David to introduce themselves, although I suspect to most of our listeners, they don't need any introduction. But just in case, Adrian, would you tell our folks a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Thanks, Donna, for the introduction. Hello, everyone. I am Adrian Coles. I am a drug developer at Bristol-Myers Squibb in the day, and I am a active servant and participant of our association at night. I'm very pleased to be the chair of the Committee on Minorities and Statistics and also the co-chair of the Anti-Racism Task Force, and excited to share more about the work that that task force was able to accomplish with the host today.
And David, would you share a little bit about your night and day jobs?
Thank you very much. I'm David Marker. I recently retired, or at least semi-retired, from a career in survey research and biostatistics. I'm still doing some consulting for the Centers for Disease Control, and I've been involved with the ASA in a variety of ways, from serving on the board and chairing the Scientific and Public Affairs Advisory Committee. But chairing the Anti-Racism Task Force has been a wonderful culmination of my activities so far on behalf of ASA.
Well, thanks. And again, we're really appreciative of you and actually of all the members of the task force for the work that you did. When you were first here to talk about the beginnings of the task force, we asked you to share initial insights. And so while we'll do a deeper dive into the recommendations, we thought we'd start by asking you to share the insights that you've gained over the past 18 months or so working with the task force. And Adrian, we'll start with you.
I think that is a very good question. Even before I share my insights and some of my own personal reflections, I do want to acknowledge the rest of the team who isn't able to be with us today. Anything that we've been able to accomplish as a task force is only due to the hard work and the commitment of all of those professionals who signed up to be a part of this journey. And so I'm very thankful for their diligence, the work that they put in, and what we've produced as a team. You know, as I think about the journey that we've been on and where we are in that journey, three words really come to mind. Those three words are grace, courage, and steadfastness. And so hopefully I won't be too long-winded as I'm sort of reflecting on those words today. But, you know, as a member of a historically marginalized community, this work has just reminded me that grace and action can coexist. So on one hand, we absolutely do not want to fail to properly respond to the urgency of now. We are a little over a month from the second anniversary of the murder of George Floyd. And as we all know, I don't imagine that there are many people in the world who are not aware of this, but certainly as we know, his death really was the spark to widespread social unrest that it really has forced the country to examine his character in a way that doesn't happen very frequently. So it's right for us as an association to, you know, in a sense, strike while the iron is hot and to make progress along this racial front within our own organization. But this process has reminded me that we must progress together. And if we are really to do that, then it's necessary for us to extend grace to those members of our organization who really want to be a part of the solution, but maybe they've been traumatized or victimized by their own racial and ethnic privilege along the way. You know, when I was serving in, you know, my country as a United States Marine, I noticed that there was frequently stragglers when we would go on runs or forced marches, particularly when we were going to long runs or the really long marches, right? And so part of my role once I became a staff sergeant of Marines was to go back and to pick up the stragglers. Now, the unit didn't stop progressing towards our destination, but we also didn't believe that it was right to leave a team member behind. And so I believe that the same is true within our association. There are some of us who may be a bit further down the road when it comes to racial progress and really more broadly, justice, equity, diversity, and inclusion in general. However, there will always be the need to go back and to help those who are advancing a bit slower. And that requires grace, and that's okay. And so in this setting, you know, when we're talking about our professional association, grace is necessary. Second, I think is time. It is a time for us to be courageous. You know, it's not easy to look at yourself and accept that there might be significant change that is required for us to be who we profess that we want to be. And that's what I believe our report is asking of the organization. And so during this time where we are consuming this report for the first time, I think it's very important for us to remain focused on the destination and not be overwhelmed by the reality that there are several opportunities for us to do better in this way. It's critical for us to prioritize togetherness and professional camaraderie as opposed to retreating to our corners. You know, oftentimes we feel comfort in our corners, right? You know, we are part of communities that in most cases, they think like us, they act like us. And so there's a sense of comfort there. And so we have to resist that urge to retreat to our corners in that way. I think it's critical for us to remember that the aim of our report is to repair a broader system and not to criticize any one person within that system. I appreciate the fact that it's easy to feel attacked if you've been highly engaged within this system, within our organization, but the report is not seeking to attack or to call out any individual. It's simply drawing attention to components of this ecosystem that we exist within that have not been actively anti-racist. And in addition, it also makes recommendations for positive change. And so each of these critical items require courage and objectivity. And I believe that every member of our association is on this diversity, equity, and inclusion journey together. And the progress that we make today will help our field to properly respond to society's request for science that is not biased by race and ethnicity, but rather a science that can really help provide every person access to a life of dignity, a life filled with good health, adequate resources, and just equal life outcomes in general. And then lastly, I think one of the biggest insights or takeaways for me is that we must be steadfast, right? We must remain committed. We must see this work through to completion, even after the focus of our national discourse has shifted. And I believe, you know, it's appropriate to acknowledge that our effort is a response to the urgency of now, but we must stay the course simply because it's the right thing to do. And so again, when I think about the journey, when I think about the big takeaways for me, there's certainly a lot of things that we can point to within the organization and opportunities to drive change outside of the organization. But I'm focused on those items because I think it speaks to not only individual characters, but the character of the organization that we want to remain a part of.
Thanks very much, Adrian. And David, we'll turn to you for your big insights.
Let me start by seconding Adrian's comment about the wonderful task force that we had and the way we worked together really nicely. And then just also second the wonderful statement that Adrian just made. Couldn't agree more with the points that he just made. People are at different stages in understanding both the concepts involved in looking at organizations from an anti-racist perspective and also moving along that continuum, especially those of us who come from historically advantaged parts of the community. I know that when we talked last time, both Adrian and I mentioned a number of books that we've been reading that are really helpful to understand the impacts of our society, the way it has been set up for the last hundreds of years. And you have to understand that to recognize the need to change and the need, as was just mentioned, to steadfastly work for change. Having said that, I think one of the biggest findings that came out of this for me was that there's just this incredible breadth of our profession. It's involved in so many different activities that impact not only our professional lives, but our roles in society. And that provides a wide range of potential anti-racist applications. There was no shortage of what can we do to make things better. On the other hand, when you then start saying, okay, so what are we supposed to do about it? You realize that while identifying things that could be done better is easy, figuring out how to do it sometimes is quite complicated. And it's going to take a lot of hard work. I'm really glad that the board of directors has voted to hire a consulting company to help with the implementation of the task force report. Because just as a couple of examples, there's a lack of JEDI-related language in all of our official documents. And that's not necessarily been a problem because we have leaders who are dedicated to diversity and equity and inclusion. But without having it in our founding documents, we're really dependent on that we happen to have people who are dedicated. And it's not institutionalized and isn't guaranteed to continue. When I was a consultant on quality improvement, I know one of the things we always found is people will adjust their behavior to the review and reward system. So we have to make sure that anti-racist actions are part of what we are rewarding among all of our staff and our volunteers. And then tied to all of this is that the same breadth that I just referred to of involvement makes the ASA really well situated to be an anti-racist organization. We have many sections, chapters, committees that are already doing a number of things that may not have been framed and reported as anti-racist, but that really are able to contribute in this way. Just think about, you know, we have a section on statistics in the environment. They have always had issues they've been looking into about environmental justice. We have chapters throughout the organization that have mentoring programs, but I'm not sure if they've particularly focused on the mentoring of people who come from historically disadvantaged groups and what could be done. We even have a whole appendix in the report identifying ways that different parts of the organization can think about how they are perfectly aligned with anti-racist activities, but maybe it's never been the priority. It's never been a focus. So I'm really excited about the incredible breadth of opportunity that we have if we put our mind to it.
So thank you both. And David, that makes a good segue here to the recommendations of the report. So Adrian, I'm going to ask you, and David alluded to this a bit, but one of the recommendations in the report was a review of the governance structure. Why is that important, Adrian?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, Ron. I think first and foremost, you know, we understand that how we govern ourselves and how we describe the way that we want to govern ourselves in our documents and, you know, and other components of that governing framework will be a major contributor to the culture that is established within the organization. And so as we continue to, you know, lean into this value for diversity, equity, and inclusion, particularly along racial and ethnic lines, we recognize that it is important to make sure that our governing framework captures that value, or that it well reflects that value. And so, you know, having taken time to look through, you know, many of those documents, well, all of those documents really very thoroughly, you know, the team did put forth the recommendation that you just acknowledged. And again, I believe wholeheartedly that to really create the change that we want to see such that it is enduring and lasting, you really have to create change in the heart of a person. But while we are continuously doing life together, we're serving together, we're working together, and we are creating an environment where people can see each other more clearly and develop more respect for one another that leads to the type of outcomes that we're describing, we do believe that making sure that, you know, that value is expressed in our governing framework will help to create the type of professional equity that we want to see, that we need to see. And so, again, I think having those values clearly reflected in the Constitution, the strategic plan, and all of our governing documents is going to be a huge part of the journey ahead to reach our anti-racism vision.
Thanks. I would just add to that, in addition to the use of the governance documents to drive the direction of the association, they also serve to tell other people who we are and what we value. And so reflecting those values more clearly in our governance documents is going to make a difference as well. So, David, let me turn to you again about recommendations. I know that you were very much involved in thinking about the external influence portions of the report. Can you tell us what these recommendations were about and why they are important?
Thank you for asking that. Yes, it's very easy for organization, a professional organization like the ASA, to focus on the internal sides of things, the treatment, the nourishing of a next generation of statisticians, data scientists, biostatisticians, you know, the academic training and all of that part of it, which is vitally important. But statistics is, and biostatistics and data science, it has such a large impact on society that we really need to address the impact that we can and should have through the use of statistics. And as we know, a lot of times the statistics are not being done by statisticians, which can be very problematic. So these recommendations, I think, are probably the most far-reaching and impactful recommendations in the task force report. How do we maximize the use of statistics and data science for good? And how do we prevent abuse that ends up having racist outcomes? I think the ASA is not only well-situated to lead, but I think it must lead. There isn't anyone else who is going to address this. So, for example, we have the ASA is doing some ongoing training of people willing to be expert witnesses in court. And that's terrific. But we should make sure that part of what we are explaining to people is to consider how to be an expert witness helping with voting rights cases and discrimination cases to speak to that. I know I've personally been involved in 3 voting rights cases, and the statistics is central to the argument. You know, do these laws discriminate against protected classes, minority groups? And you get into all kinds of important statistical issues. And if you don't have somebody carefully reviewing it, it's very easy for a state to try and manipulate the statistics, and you have to call them on it. Also, we have proposed that the ASA should look into developing a template for organizations that use statistics, hire statisticians on what should be expected of them to use the statistics appropriately, to consider the both racist and anti-racist potential actions or results of their actions, and how they should behave in a way that will have anti-racist outcomes that will lead to equity. So I think this could potentially be modeled on the APOR, the American Association for Public Opinion Research, has a transparency initiative where they got lots of companies around the world that collect data to promise to share their response rates, their inclusion procedures, and a whole variety of things so that you could understand the quality of the data they were reporting. But here I can imagine that, you know, who are the big employers of statisticians? In addition to universities and the government, you get companies like Google and Meta that make tremendous use of statistics. And we know that historically, some of those uses have had racist outcomes. Not necessarily that the people using it meant it to be, maybe or maybe not, but the outcomes of predictive policing procedures, of facial recognition software, of some of the early DNA testing, that all of these things had very different false positives and false negative rates, depending upon the race of the people involved. And this is just really objectionable. And so what should be expected of them? And hopefully the ASA can take the lead in developing a rubric that we can hopefully get lots of people to join onto.
Thanks, David and Adrian, for helping us understand the recommendations. And actually, to follow up on that, Adrian, I know that you and David had the opportunity to meet with the ASA Board of Directors at their April meeting, but that you will continue outreach to the community. Can you tell us a little bit about some of the activities that you have planned to share the final report and recommendations?
Sure. You know, in addition to being, you know, on this wonderful podcast and, you know, briefly discussing the work that the team has accomplished, you know, we're also planning to appear on Stats and Stories. In addition to that, we're planning to have a session at JSM that would also discuss the findings and recommendations with our broader membership. And, you know, hopefully that will, you know, invite other people into the conversation and really motivate them to be, you know, a part of this work going forward. In addition to that, there are plans to publicly share the report on the ASA's website. And so I would imagine that we will also send a notice out to the membership to let them know that report is there and that it can be accessed by, you know, members and other persons, you know, external from the organization as well. And so those are the core things that we're planning to do. There are likely to be some other activities that are also considered as we move forward. But again, the idea is just that we want to be transparent in sharing the findings and recommendations. And we want to really welcome people to come in and to be a part of this change going forward.
And David, to follow up on that, Adrian just mentioned the conversation, and I know both of you have shared that you really do want the community to be involved. So if members of the community have questions or want to offer feedback, how should they reach out?
So on the ASA website, if you go into the little search area, you can put in anti-racism and you'll get a link to our sub-site where the task force report is there. And there is a form where you can provide comments and suggestions. You can also, in that form, volunteer if you're interested in helping out, because as we've said, this is going to be an ongoing effort for many years. There are a lot of things we hope to accomplish in the next few months, but some of them are going to take years. So if people are interested in helping out, they can identify themselves. You can also reach out to members of the board of directors of the ASA and tell them that you're interested. I would also encourage you to reach out to the leadership of your chapter or your sections that you belong to and encourage them to be addressing these anti-racist issues and coming up with creative ways to do that. And finally, another thing you can do is get involved with the JEDI Outreach Group. That group's focus is more immediate compared to the task force's kind of long-term structural change, but it's all part of the same effort that we're trying to move forward here.
So again, thank you both. And we're going to wind up with one last question for both of you. I'll start with David and then Adrian can follow up. But what did you learn through your participation in the Anti-Racism Task Force?
I learned a lot. And part of what I learned, I don't think I even know yet. It's an ongoing process. Clearly, every time I'm involved in something like this, my sensitivity to the world around me and how statements and actions can impact people differently has been raised. My consciousness has been raised. I try to be more sensitive in how I say things. I react to how other people say things in a different way because of the increased knowledge I've gained from working with folks. But I've learned tremendous amount from the incredible breadth and depth of knowledge in the members of the task force. Really helped expand my view. You know, even as a statistical consultant for almost 40 years, I barely scratched the surface of the range of ways statistics are used. So it was so helpful to have people from different backgrounds on the task force and people I can go back to in the future with questions to follow up. I also realized, as I've said at the opening, that while identifying ways we can and should contribute is easy, determining how to implement them is tough. Sometimes you can really identify some of those low-hanging fruit that we should go after first, and that's great. But in all likelihood, when you take away those low-hanging fruit, you're going to find there are more fruit that need to be grabbed that are further away. And it's going to really be an ongoing process. And lastly, I learned that Adrian Coles is a great guy to work with.
I think we can all say hear, hear to that one. Adrian, what did you learn during your time working with the task force?
Well, I think the first thing I learned is that David is very gracious. Thank you, David, for that compliment. And I also agree that you are a tremendous co-chair to have on this journey. You know, really, I think my biggest lessons, you know, somewhat captured in my earlier statements, right? I think, you know, learning to appreciate the journey that every person is on individually and how those individual journeys gets us to our destination collectively is something that I should always keep at the forefront of my mind. Again, I think being a person who is from a marginalized community, there are times where experiences may be so frequent that it's difficult to believe that everyone who is not a part of that community can't see them just as well as you can or just as well as other members of your community. And I think throughout this journey, I've met some people who were just wonderful people. They really have a good heart, really good character. And maybe for one reason or another, they were not as aware. And I think learning how to do life with those people and appreciate our differences is really what diversity is all about. And I think in, you know, welcoming so many different people to the table to be a part of the task force, you know, the team was very intentional. The leaders of the organization, when they put together the task force, they were very intentional about putting together a team that would reflect the type of diversity, equity, and inclusion that, you know, we want to see in our organization moving forward. And so we had a wonderful team, a very diverse team, and we created a very inclusive environment for that team. And so, again, you know, hearing statements from some of the task force members and one-on-one conversations and large group meetings and people really having a heart to be a part of the solution and really being unaware of the depth of the problem, I think I've grown more appreciation for that diversity and experience. And then I think the last thing that, you know, I'll say that I've grown an appreciation for is for, you know, my colleagues within, you know, the statistics and data science field, really wanting to be a part of the solution, not just for our discipline, but more broadly for other scientific communities as well. I think as we think about the utility of our discipline in so many areas of society and us taking this stand and taking the initiative to own places where we can grow and we can be better and to publicly share that, you know, I just believe that takes a lot of courage. And so I knew a long time ago that statistics was certainly the career field for me. But as I continue to engage in this professional organization and continue to work and serve with so many wonderful people, it just continues to reinforce to me that I made a great decision. So many great takeaways, but those are two that certainly come to mind.
Well, David and Adrian, thank you very much for sharing time with us today. Ron and I are grateful to be able to have this conversation with you and to acknowledge your work and contributions as well as the contributions of your entire team. And so with that, I'll thank our listeners as well and turn it over to Ron for his top 10.
Thank you, Donna. You know, we are always trying to help our Practical Significance podcast listeners to better navigate daily life. And what could be more helpful and more practical than advice on puzzle solving, right? Of course, right. So the top 10 list is going to be a bit different this month. For those of you who, like my wife, are avid Wordle players, we bring you the top 10 statistical terms you can use in Wordle. To begin with, in case you aren't familiar with this, Wordle words must be five letters long, and they must be in the dictionary. I had to admit fun statistical terms like LOGIT, which, as you recall, is a portmanteau of logistic unit, because it is not considered a word for the purposes of Wordle. I also did not pluralize four-letter terms. That still left a substantial list of words, so I tended to select those words that are used in common speech but have a specific and usually different meaning in statistics. If you think other terms should have been in the top 10, drop me a note. Okay, here we go with the top 10 statistical terms usable in Wordle. Number 10, alpha. Number 9, frame. Number 8, joint. Number 7, model. Number 6, power. Number 5, state. Number 4, range. Number 3, trend. Number 2, prior. And the number one statistical term usable in Wordle has to be stats. And that's it for the May episode of Practical Significance. Thanks for joining us. The conversation will continue next month.
Thank you for listening to this edition of Practical Significance, the podcast of the American Statistical Association. A new episode will be coming your way next month from AmStat News, the ASA's monthly membership magazine.